You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Well, you're not going to be able to troll on in this unless you have a really big boat with a lot of gas or fuel or whatever. We're going to go to East Island today on the show. And the reason why is many of you saw in the French Frigate Shoals recently an island that virtually is going away. And it's not an inhabited island. It's a small little place. So it really, in the big picture, it didn't really matter unless you're a turtle or a seabird. And then it really matters. Suka Ishizaki is the Protected Species Coordinator for the Council. She joins us on this edition of our Go Fish segment with the Council to talk about that. Not because it's right in our backyard, but because it might be someday. So first of all, nice to see you again. And I would imagine people in your neck of the woods, in your profession, when you see something like this, it's actually really a threat. And I don't care what you think about global warming and climate change and who's causing it. There are things that are going on that we need to deal with. What is this? What's so special about this place, East Island?
Thanks for having me back.
Always a pleasure.
The East Island, what's really significant about this place, especially for Honu, is that about 90% of the nesting of the Honu you see around here actually happens in French Frigate Shoals.
Wow.
And of that, about half of that's been happening on East Island. So you have this island half of the nesting of our Honu in Hawaii all of a sudden disappearing because of a Category 4 hurricane that went through, and I think it was a storm surge that shifted the sand around, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden it's gone.
Okay, now here's the thing. We know that there's resiliency in all species, that they figure out a way. I think that most people would be shocked that are listening to see that such a huge percentage of our turtle come, because I think most of the people here think the turtles around the main Hawaiian Islands, they're here, you know, and there are some, but not as many apparently.
Well, the thing is, with the turtles that you see around here, they're all born over in the northwestern Hawaiian area, mm-hmm. most of it anyways. And so with adults, when the females and the males are ready to mate, they go up to northwestern Hawaiian Islands, yeah. and then the females go and nest over there. So everything that you see around here, they're all originating.
Okay, now wait a minute. So let's go out to turtles at Hawaii Kai, where I know about, and let's take a 100-pound green sea turtle. That turtle is going to travel how far to mate?
Several hundred miles a minimum to get to the nesting.
And area. And there are a few things along the road that would like to interrupt that voyage.
I'm sure there are. But the good thing with the large turtles, they don't have too much of predators except for large sharks, and mm-hmm. even that, you know, they're really going for the smaller ones mm-hmm. for the most part. So they do make that travel pretty successfully.
A lot of people, Asuka, I think, assume because there's so many eggs and there's so many little babies. Oh, this is not going to be a problem. It turned out to be a problem because you were telling me, you know, when we first met a couple of years back, that, you know, all those babies and there's a very small percentage of them that actually grow to maturity. Very small.
Yeah, the best estimate or the number that people use all the time is 1 in every 1,000 eggs make it to adulthood.
Golly.
That's a lot. That's a really small number. But when you think about it, the turtles are nesting. The females nest every 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. Every time they go nest, they're laying 4 or so nests every season mm-hmm. when they go back. And for every
nest.
So
that's a lot of production. Yeah.
Every nest, there's 100 or mm-hmm. so eggs. So every season, they're producing 500 eggs. And then they do that every 3 or 4 years. Multiply it by the number of females out there. And so it is, you know, it all adds up, right? And so that's one good thing that they've got going for them. And the other thing, too, is that the positive side of the story is that the Category 4 hurricane hit beginning of October when mm-hmm. the nesting season was pretty much over. Some of the nests were still there, but most of the hatchlings probably would have left the beaches.
That's the good news. But, and I know that the island didn't totally disappear. As a matter of fact, it's already been shown that some of it has come back. But enough, or do we know?
We don't know quite yet. Yeah, and I think that's the interesting thing that we'll be looking at in the next several years is what will the females do? Mm-hmm. And, you know, next year when the first batch comes back to East Island and see that there's not a whole lot of sand left there, what do they do? Will they try to nest there still? Will they try to go find another place?
You know?
And where would they go?
Does geography suggest that there would be something not too far away from that, East Island for them to do that?
So around French, once you're outside of French Forget Shoals, there's not a whole lot right around it. And so the closest thing closer to us is probably going to be the Niihau, Kauai area. There are more sandy areas further up the chain. So if they keep traveling up north, they might find more nesting beaches.
Okay, here's something that I think is kind of interesting. And you know, people, it's particularly listeners of this program, they've heard me talking a lot about pelagics. And about Mai Mai go from a baby to 20 pounds in a year. They very, 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 very quickly. But I think if, when you see an old grizzled turtle and you see this little baby turtle, how long does it take to get from the size of a bottom of a beer can to say 10 pounds or something?
An adult, I don't know how long it takes to get to 10 pounds.
Or just at any stage.
To an adult. For a turtle to start nesting, it does take about 20 or so years. That's the current estimate. Minimum 20 years or so, 25.
So once again, explaining that the ones that make it to that are the exception way more than the rule.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so but what happened when you say the Category 4 storm? I guess there's very few times when it's that high when they hit landfall, and who knows what happens to all of these storms, but there seem to be more and more of them. So let's talk about the first amount, the devastation that it had. It really did sort of just, whatever was on the surface is gone. And there wasn't much there to begin with, right?
There wasn't. The island is really an atoll, and so it's mostly sand and gravel that was several meters above sea level. And so previously they were projecting that, you know, with 2 meters of sea level rise, you would have about 30% reduction in the land mass of the island.
But when you're starting with a small island to begin with, a 30% reduction is a lot.
Right, and that was just taking into consideration the sea level rise, and now we have a situation where the sand just shifted with that Category 4 storm. And so that's kind of the, all of, you know, up to this point, we were really looking at that change happening gradually over time, and now it really happened overnight.
Well, when you take a look at the entire chain, going from the old days to the creation of the new land off the Big Island, as the chain moved and it got old, some of that is I mean, that can't come back, can it? I mean, that's just like dead coral, dead islands.
Exactly, and that's the natural cycle of the Hawaiian Islands, where, you know, further up the chain you go, they're older islands, and eventually they'll disappear. That's the fate of those islands.
Yeah.
That happens in geologic time. But with turtles, they have been around a really, really long time. Now, what we do know is that even for around Hawaii, sea level rise, or sea level around Hawaii has been at our level, current level, or even higher levels within the last 2,000 to 5,000 years.
Which
you know, seems like a really long time us, but to turtles, that's been around a long time, evolutionarily speaking.
I was going
to
say, how have the turtles
really
been around?
Time. Yeah, yeah. But then again, the question is, what happens when these sands, you know, go away overnight, and within a matter of between seasons, they're gone? And so we'll see, you know, there's few things that can happen. The sand could come back and start to create
say sometimes mama nature taketh away and sometimes she brings it back. That's I'm glad you brought that up because that installs everybody needs to have some hope. But the interesting thing to me is, and we've had this discussion before, that ever since the kapua started in the main Hawaiian Islands, even for sustenance for eating turtles, it seems like they made more than a miraculous recovery. I mean, the numbers have increased exponentially since we've been dealing with this since what, the mid 70s or whenever it was, 70 something when they ate or something like that. I have a turtle tag that I was going to bring in and show you. So that means that, but what of that recovery is going to now be affected by this particular incident? And like I said, where might be plan B? And you said it might be right here in our backyard. It might be Niihau.
It could be, and we don't know, and that really will be the interesting part to see where the turtles go, where they start to show up, or if they start to show up at all. And if, you know, some folks might remember several years back, there was a push to delist the honu from
ESA,
the Endangered Species Act, and the NOAA fisheries that made the decision, along with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, decided that it's not time yet to delist them because of these climate change threats. And they thought that when sea level rise happened, when French Frigate Shoal disappears, then turtles would be in trouble.
Well, I've heard from fishermen, and these are people that used to catch turtle. I remember back in the day when we did that. We would go to Molokai, catch a bunch of turtle, put them in the boat, fill them up with ice, go across the channel to Maui. Every restaurant on Front Street in Maui bought turtles because they specialized in that. But it would have been counterproductive to have to lift the ban and have Mother Nature have a problem too. That means a lot of years of great work would have just disappeared. You know, isn't that kind of the worry? I know that, you know, I'm one of the ones who would like to see it delisted eventually and being able to farm them or eat them or whatever because they were so good. But, you know, the reality is if, you know, once they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah, but think about it this way. The adults weren't harmed, right? And what you need is the adults to continue to reproduce.
Okay.
And so again, the question is, where do those females end up and do they start to find the new nesting beaches? And there's some studies elsewhere where there's been creation of new beaches, either naturally or artificially, and turtles do start to colonize those nesting beaches pretty quickly after those nesting beaches are created for whatever reason. And then there's also examples of with several different sea turtle species, there are areas where they nest around the world where sand shifts very rapidly between seasons because of storms on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And even when that happens, turtles
But they figure to get in the middle of it, right, and do their thing.
And they'll go figure it out. And so one thing, you know, that George Balaz, a prominent green turtle expert in Hawaii.
And we're going to get him in here again, I promise, one of these days soon.
He worked for NOAA Fisheries for a long time, and he just recently retired, but he's been saying for a really long time that the turtles will move. So this will be a test. And, you know, one thing that could happen is that the first year that they come back, they might all fail, and most of them might fail, and they might drop their eggs in the water. That could happen. But over time, several nesting seasons later, we do hope that they can, you know, gain from the experience and find another place and go figure it out.
That's really interesting. And I've learned a lot from my friend, Dr. Andy Rossiter at the aquarium. Here in Hawaii, we only really think of two or three turtles. I mean, everybody knows the honu, the green sea turtle, and certainly a lot of us know the hawksbill, even though it's much more. But then we talk about what you and I have talked about before, the leatherback and the loggerhead. So that's four right off the bat, but there's lots more.
There's three more.
Yeah. And so, but are any of them ever found here?
Not nesting, but if you go a little bit further out, olive ridley turtles are another Pacific species that you do see them. We do see them in the Hawaii longline fishery bycatch. And so we know that they are somewhere around in the pelagic areas around Hawaii.
But must be way less in numbers. I mean, than some other...
But olive ridley turtles are actually pretty numerous. There's at least a million nesting females now in the east side of the Pacific, Mexico.
And how does that compare with the estimates of the green sea turtle?
So the green turtle here in Hawaii, in the last several years, the high point at East Island was about over 800 females.
Mm-hmm.
And so
800.
So what that means is, so that's about half of it. So we probably had in those years about 1,600 females nesting, right? And then those were that one year. And then there's two other years where those females don't come back. And so there's probably a good... 4,500 females.
But that number is a recovery number. Even though you said something really interesting, and folks, you got to understand that from the time these hatchlings appear to the time they can breed is a lot of time, and there's a lot of them go missing in that time period. So that means that at least the turtles that were nesting this time on that island were only a portion, and so their counterparts. Would they go down there and then not be able to find a place, or would the other turtles tell them, hey, that place got hammered? You know,
there must be some kind of interspecies communications.
I bet you there is some.
That would be really interesting if they did let each other know. We don't know that. But what we do know from other species is that the first time nesters tend to be a lot more flexible in where they pick and choose to nest, even though generally they tend to go back to where they were born. They tend to have a lot more flexibility in those first few times that they're nesting before they really key down into, oh, this is where I go back every time.
Interesting. I mean, how that might compare, even though it's off subject. A lot of people that love to go fishing in Alaska, and I've been up there a lot, and in Oregon and Washington, how the salmon know to return to under horrific, you know, things that change in their environment, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, I think it'll be really interesting to see this because when you think about it, we have those adults that have been nesting at East Island already, mm-hmm. but then there's a whole 20-some years worth of cohorts, young cohorts that haven't entered that nesting age yet. And so those turtles haven't had the experience of nesting, and they don't know East Island.
I was going to say, they're just hanging out somewhere else.
They are. Yeah, and so that could be, you know, a glimmer of hope as well. And again, interesting to see where they end up and where they start to
nest. What about, and I know this comes up every now and again, what about turtles that are bred in captivity? I mean, what I know that it's growing, that there's a lot of effort being made. Is it hard to do that? I mean, is it hard to create an environment that would make them breed or have babies?
It has been done, but it is resource intensive, again, because it takes many, many years for them to mature. So there's been area, you know, the Cayman Islands, for example, has a turtle farm.
Right.
But economically, it really doesn't make a lot of sense to grow them over time, you know, 20 years in the farm.
Sounds good on
big.
Paper, but when you realize, hey, wait a minute, it's going to be two decades before that batch does this, what it wants to do.
Yeah. So there's, you know, some of that. And then there's also efforts, you know, in Hawaii at Sea Life Park and other places where they raise the hatchlings to a certain point and then they release them.
Yeah, I was part of that, watching that. And it is truly amazing. And the only thing that one would hope is that by doing that, it makes everybody feel warm and fuzzy, but we don't know what happens to them after they get released.
That's exactly right. And there's you know, some evidence to show that they can come back, but we don't really know because we don't know how they're imprinting on certain locations. And so we don't know if we're messing with that imprinting process by raising them in captivity on land and from without them swimming around those first
years. Have you ever asked yourself as a scientist, and by the way, Asuka Ishizaki is the protected species coordinator for the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council, and that's why we get to spend this time together. That you know, everybody wants to know, hey, that means that there's all these turtles all over the place that are not breeding this year or next year, and they're eating. They got to eat. They got to stay, and they got to grow. So there's a lot more of them than you think. But maybe it's out of sight, out of mind. Where do they go? Where are they? I guess they stay around the main islands or wherever until they get this. The light switch goes off in their head, and they say, "Oops, I got to breed this year."
Yeah, so the first several years of the turtles' lives, they're called lost years. They're called lost years because they're not in the coastal areas. They're somewhere floating out in the pelagic area, out in the open ocean, and we really don't see them. And so they usually, for the Hawaii turtles, they start to settle into the nearshore areas around 6 years of age. And that's why you don't really see, like, the, you know, anything smaller than a dinner plate size turtle.
Yeah.
You don't see anything that's, you know, 4 or 5 inches long.
And by the way, folks, if you do come across one of these that is a dinner plate size, don't do that to it,
because
you
know. Yeah.
But seriously, I'm just curious because, you know, we've done a lot of stories about, just last time we had John Wiley and we talked about the Akuli Project and how they're able to communicate and make holes when a predator comes through. One would have to say that if there are these thousands and thousands of turtles, are they in bunches? Are they in packs? They must be.
Their green turtles are generally known to be solitary, so they're on their own. But there are, you know, interesting things, like on Maui, there's an area where they all come up to bask on the beach.
I've seen that,
You've probably seen those pictures. So they're, you know, figuring out, oh, this is a good place somehow. And we don't see this.
By the way, some of them are big.
They are.
Some of these are really big turtles.
Yeah. And we don't see this in green turtles, but in other turtle species, like Olive Ridley's turtles, they nest in these aggregations called aribaras. And so what they do is they all mostly synchronize their nesting, and they come all at once, and there's, like, you know, thousands of turtles on the beaches, and you've probably seen those pictures too. And so there has to be, at least at that level, some way of them communicating with each other and synchronizing their nesting. We don't see that a whole lot in the green turtles.
You know, we had another example the other day, and, you know, I actually meant to call you that day because we had a couple calls about it, about the shark fins that these fishermen were taking back, with them, trying to do it as luggage, and talking about the number of that things that happens to. And maybe, you know, reflect a little bit on, we have been pretty cooperative as a community, a fishing community, on the kapu and the turtles? I mean, I know that there's some stuff going on, but it's not anywhere near as it could be. But what about in other places where these turtles are? What sort of, even though they're a, you know, a protected or an endangered species here, other people don't think they are. They got to be collecting them somewhere.
Yeah, and I think around Hawaii, the good thing about Hawaii is that our honu population is really a Hawaii population. Mm-hmm. And so they mostly stay around Hawaii in U.S. waters, mm-hmm. and they're pretty protected from other countries. So now when you go to other places around the mm-hmm. Pacific, there are places that still continue to harvest them legally.
Yep.
Some places, you know, could be considered over-harvested, but other places they're managing it well too. There's a place in Japan where they have a small legal harvest, and the population mm-hmm. continues to grow there. Australia, they have indigenous yeah. harvest that's managed well in the population.
Well, isn't that dependent, Asuka, on having a cooperative agreement? This is what we do. This is the goal, and there are consequences.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't
yeah.
overstep a bound. You stay within the rule. I think that makes even those of us that would rather say, you know, whatever, I just want to eat them. Wait a minute. You know, maybe that's going to happen again someday, but I guess that there are some species or some animals on the planet that have been around a lot longer than we have. And if we hasten their demise, we hasten our own demise.
Yeah, you know? And I think the turtle is a really good example because it's a species where we've seen all over the world over-harvested and the population yeah. declined. But when we regulate that, when we protect yeah. them, we manage it, they can bounce back. And so it's like everything else. It's like, you know, fish that we talk yeah. about all the time. Management is the key. Making sure that we have good management, good enforcement, yeah. rules, people following the rules. That's key to everything.
Okay, well, here's a couple quick ones. Okay, let's say that most people would be in agreement to this. They still have to say, all right, when they were first listed, one of the things that noticed as they started to get, you know, increase in just visibility so you could see them again, they had these lesions and these sores all over them. And everybody was wondering, okay, and I know Dr. Bowles is the perfect person to talk about this, but we all knew that, was it man created or was it something cyclical or where did they get this? And so it led. So the really question out of this is more not about that, but what do they eat? In other words, you know, I'm every turtle I've seen diving, they're eating little things. They're eating like algae. They're eating off of coral. Mm-hmm. You know, is that basically their diet?
Yes. Once they grow up to be a certain size, they're pretty much vegetarians for the most part, at mm-hmm. least naturally anyway.
Yeah.
So they're going after, you know, seagrass, algae. And interestingly, in some parts around Hawaii, if you see them along the rivers,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're coming up and eating grass along the banks.
That's interesting. Yeah,
so they're eating whatever that's, you know, grassy things, and they can apparently digest it. And so, that is true. Yeah. They're
no, the reason I bring it up is because a fisherman said to me when he was listening to our program not too long ago on monk seals that, you know, a lot of people here visit, see the monk seal as a competitor, you know, for assets. And I'm thinking, well, that's certainly not the turtles, although there are certainly other things eating the algae and the seaweed and the limu that the turtles are. And so if they eat the majority of it, there's not going to be left for others. So it must be very interesting as a scientist and so for all of you in the council to see how these things play into each other.
Yeah, the whole algae, you know, there's too many turtles and there's no more limu is a thing that we hear a lot. We don't really know for sure if that's actually the case, if there's a direct cause. But there's a lot of things going on, right? Because we don't have as much fresh water flow into the ocean as much, which is important for limu. The turtles are also eating the invasive, you know, ogo too. And so that can be helpful. But overall, there's a lot of different things going on in the ocean that's different from, you know, decades ago. So it's really interesting.
Okay, so what you've learned so far, gang, from Asuka is that they're eating, they're vegetarian kind of. I know that they will eat anything if they have to, but so far it doesn't seem there's a problem. I do know that when you take a look at, say, endangered species, let's look at what happened with invasive species like Salvinia molesta and these things. I do know that there's been a lot of that at Moanalua Bay, and there's also a lot of turtles there. So that must mean the turtles eat the bad stuff too, and a lot of it probably.
I think they do, but I think the invasives are also, you know, pretty strong too, and so they can grow back pretty fast.
Yeah, and what they did at Lake Wilson, thank goodness for the military cooperation then years back, And that thing was great. It was duplicating every few days. It doubled in size. Mm-hmm. It was like, whoa. Okay, so what you're saying here, I want to know what you think about the long-term either monitoring of this East Island. Going back to, if you're just joining us, Asuka Ishizaki is the protected species coordinator for the council. And we were explaining, she was explaining what happened to this East Island in that Cat 3 or Cat 4 hurricane. It virtually said, we're going to, and it ate the island. And do we have any idea, was there anything happening at the time where you said we probably got lucky because it was not a breeding period, or we didn't see a lot of babies, a lot of dead things?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. So what I'm getting at is, when would the next cycle be coming up? Right after now, right?
So the next nesting season for Hono is going to be next summer.
Yeah,
so
okay.
I think the monk seals are around different times of the year, but monk seal, the turtles, we'll find out next year.
Yeah,
I think the real test will be the next several years, seeing that first cycle of nesting turtles come back, and then the second cycle come back.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully within the next 5 years, you know, we'll really start to see what they do and also what happens to the island. So for one, will be really interesting to see how this all plays out, and really looking forward to see how the turtles react to it.
Yeah, and what you're going to do, gang, is you're going to go to wpcouncil.org. And you're going to go look at the website and find out about this. Because I think what's interesting is, you've already said, there have been pictures taken after. And it looks like there's been, I don't know, reliction or deliction or whatever they call it. But some has come back. So one would just hope that if it continues to build back in, maybe we're all okay. How often is it, and who's going to monitor it? And who's going to take aerial photographs? What are they going to use to keep an eye on it?
Yeah, so the turtle monitoring is done every year, and so there should be a crew going back out from NOAA Fisheries next year to check on the turtles. But we do hope that they will also go to all the other islands, too, to start keeping an eye out.
Yeah.
So we'll be working with them and continuing to ask, you know, to make sure that they do those monitoring, so we are not just monitoring French Freakish Shoals, but we do start to see them, if they do start to come back in other areas, that we know that, too.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about that, by the way, is I would imagine that every time you do that they learn something. But this is and I think that maybe you should repeat what we talked about earlier. The percentage of green sea turtles in the Hawaiian Islands that comes from there is huge.
Yeah, it's about over 50%.
Yeah, from that one little tiny thing. Yeah,
yep,
yeah.
On East Island. So that's not an insignificant portion, for sure.
Yeah, but you know, in any season like this past one, you said the number of individuals that go there is pretty big, and there's not much land there. So they must have a chat with among themselves. Okay, Sally, you go over there. Martha, you go over there, because these guys, they got to put them somewhere.
Yeah, they do nest on top of each other every once in a while and dig each other's nests up. So I'm not sure how much communication is going on there. But yeah, it'll really be interesting to see what happens.
What does that portion take from the time they, you say that they're going to have four batches a year each?
Mm-hmm.
How long does it take when they lay them? What happens to them?
So usually
they just
come
leave
back.
Them?
They do.
Yeah.
There is absolutely no parenting in turtle world, contrary to what you see on Nemo.
Yeah, really.
So the nesting females will come back every couple of weeks,
mm-hmm.
And lay a new nest, go back, they'll hang out around there, and then come back up, make another nest, and lay more eggs. And then they'll do that, you know, four or five times or however many times, and then they leave. So that's pretty much it.
I've seen some video, and it's so compelling. When you watch all these eggs, like on cue, they start coming out of there, right? I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, so they have to dig the nest chamber first, and once they're comfortable with how, you know, deep it is, and they're happy with it, then they just start laying the eggs, and they're in a trance in a way, and then they will finish laying the eggs, and then they go in an hour or so of covering up the nest.
Yeah, covering the mound up, yeah.
And cleaning it up before they go back out. So that's,
And this is by the zillions, and you think, wow, we're so lucky, but boy, the reason why there are so many is because not so many make it. You know, if you counted on one-on-one, we'd be in big trouble with that.
We would be.
Yeah, but what's the light at the end of the tunnel? I mean, never mind the delisting and all that stuff. It's just to know that there's some part of the food chain or some part of nature that's been cut off at the pass so it didn't go extinct, because they've been around. Haven't the turtles been around a lot longer than us?
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah. That's pretty, you know, how can you tell the age of them, by the way? And besides size,
you really can't from the outside. Mm-hmm. You can. There is a method to look at the bone, mm-hmm. And count the rings inside,
like the rings
bone,
in
like
like
the tree rings.
Yeah,
yeah. So there's a method to do that, but otherwise it's really hard to tell the age.
We had an interesting guy, and I think it was Dr. Balzis years ago, when we were talking about what part of the turtle gets eaten, and you know, you see this big huge turtle, and you think, boy, that's a lot of meat. Well, it's not. Because the whole inside the shell, that's just intestines and stuff going on. It's generally not consumed. Isn't the meat mostly in the shoulders and the flippers?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But in most places where green turtles have been utilized, mm-hmm. You know, most cultures have used the intestines
as well.
You know, very little of that is wasted mm-hmm. where turtles have been traditionally used.
Yeah, and the good news is, well, I mean, it's not good news if you love to eat it, but the good news is that we seem to be at least in the main Hawaiian Islands standing by that. And I'm impressed every time, and I'm sure that you all are too, when somebody gets reported. Because that takes a bad person away from what all the good people are doing, right?
Yep, and like I said, enforcement. You know, when you have management, you have to have that enforcement.
That's the other side of it. I mean, you can have all the laws you want, but if you don't have man and woman power, on the backside of it, it doesn't help very much, does it? Hey, that's terrific. Hey, that's great. So the good news is that we know what's going on in East Island, and we have a little time to sort of assess it. So you say the next group of pictures and stuff should be pretty soon?
I'm not sure about the pictures, but I'm sure those were satellite photos.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I would hope that they continue to come out with new ones.
Yeah.
So we
keep,
can see what that
keep an
is
eye
doing.
On it. Go to WPCouncil.org. That's WPCouncil.org. And remember, if you want to hear something on the program, it's easy. Drop me a line, themikebuckshow@gmail.com. TheMikeBuckShow@gmail.com. Hey, have a great Thanksgiving. We'll see you next week. Aloha.